The Theosophical Society presents Jeffrey Hodson in a talk entitled Psychedelic and Yogic Pathways to Reality.
The psychedelic experience has been described as a journey to new realms of consciousness. Some characteristic features of this realm are the transcendence of verbal concepts, transcendence of space-time dimensions, and of the ego or limiting self-identity. Such experiences, it is of enlarged consciousness, it is claimed, can occur during the psychedelic experience. But, of course, we as theosophists know that there are other ways. Amongst these are sensory deprivation, yoga exercises, disciplined meditation, religious or aesthetic ecstasies, or spontaneous experience of union with God. But recently, these expansions of consciousness are stated to have become available to anyone without any effort, and this through the ingestion of psychedelic drugs such as LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, and others. Psychologists assert, however, that such drugs do not themselves produce the transcendent experience. They merely act as chemical keys, opening the mind and freeing the nervous system of its ordinary patterns and structures. Such is the experience in part. In looking at it as theosophists, shall we first examine what apparently are the motives for seeking this pathway to reality? But the awakened people surely are also seeking mastery of themselves and of their environment. They want to be able to attain to self-knowledge and to rise above self-limitations. They also yearn, do they not, for hope, for beauty, for mortal and immortal love. And many of those real seekers for truth feel the need for direct, personally perceived, and experience light, knowledge, understanding, truth. In popular language and usage, one might say that awakened people, according to my definition, are seeking a spiritual breakthrough. Excuse the slang, please, but they are looking, perhaps, for Christianity with a kick in it, or instant religion, instant yoga, rather typical of this our age. Now I mention this because I believe after much study of this subject of ours for today, that whatever one may think about the LSD takers, their various motives and the methods they use, one should recognize, in all justice, that in some cases, if not all, a genuine search for reality has been undertaken. Therefore, perhaps some LSD takers, thus moved, might be classified as awakened, as seekers, even if only for an escape from their own limitations and those of the civilization and conditions amidst which they live and which they feel hamper, limit, and imprison them so. The psychedelic drugs, they hope, will answer their problems and will provide for them deep religious insights and break down the barriers of communication between individuals, creating a deeper love for all mankind. From the reports, some users do attain this, if only temporarily. Others do not, as we will see directly when I come to describe the psychedelic experience. In the catalogue of LSD trips, as they are called, there appears mainly to be an infinity of success or failure. Some report the greatest experience of my creative life. Others, a living hell, which I will never forget. One says, a restoration of my vision of the infinite. But another, a shattering nightmare. Dr. Alan Cohen, a former researcher with Timothy Leary, the great exponent of LSD, has now become a staff psychologist at the University of California in Berkeley, and he said this, I have stopped taking LSD a year and a half ago, for I realized that it was a fake. While LSD is powerful and dramatic in its effect, Dr. Cohen said, it did not develop me spiritually one bit and had no application to everyday life. In actuality, he said, LSD leads to spiritual egotism, not listening to others. Users think they're transcending egos when they're actually extending them. They're very rarely willing to accept any master. And then Dr. William McLaughlin, PhD, who also serves as a research associate at the University of Southern California, disclosed recently that young LSD users often fail to realize the satisfaction of achievement. Here, friends, we're coming to what I regard as a very important point. Let me repeat what Dr. McLaughlin says. Young LSD users often fail to realize the satisfaction of achievement. If you don't have a discipline, a way to be creative, you won't get it through the drug experience, he declared. He criticized the very unrealistic attitude towards economic responsibility of young LSD users. Neither the individual nor society can prove viable unless everyone pulls his own weight. And it's just this, friends, I may add, myself, that is one of the unfortunate after effects upon LSD users. Someone, I forget whom, wrote these words. How many of them will be wasted by the time they find themselves? Dr. Lehman admits that the drug can increase awareness, but is quick to add that the gains are not worth the risk. He believes that LSD can't do anything for you that you cannot get through other and safer ways. The misuse of LSD today reflects the way we live, he says. We want awareness, but it has to be an instant, do-it-yourself kind of awareness. But you don't need LSD to appreciate the beauty of flowers. Just take time out to enjoy them. If you want to improve your mind, he said, then study. Work hard. That's the answer, he says, not LSD. But people who use it are guilty of unclear thinking, if not downright ignorance. They want their inner awareness delivered to them on a silver platter. And the frightening thing about it is that we wouldn't care if everyone used it. Why try to achieve something when the good life is in a sugar cube laced with LSD? Why make love to someone you love if you believe the nicest thing you can do for that person is to hand him a sugar cube? People who live like this would lose all sense of achievement. The thrill of working for something would cease to exist. We would never experiment, and we would become totally uncreative. Our idea of inspiring someone would not be through art or love, but through a drug. Our society could not survive. How thoroughly I personally, Jeffrey Hodson, agree with him there. But now I want to draw your attention, fellow members, to something still more adverse. LSD study hints at a cancer link. Further evidence is now accumulating that LSD may damage the chromosomes, the tiny structures in cells which carry genetic information. This could mean that users run the greater risk of having cancer and, furthermore, possibly of having defective children. The damage seems to be related to the amount of LSD used, says Dr. Jose Egoscu. He's a geneticist at the Oregon Regional Primate Center in Portland, and he found chromosomal abnormalities in 6 of the 8 LSD users in their study. Here, you see, friends, we have the possibility of a terrible genetic effect handed on from generation to generation. It would not be just, however, for me when talking to you on this subject without referring to certain great benefits which can be obtained from the use of LSD under strict therapeutic control. Much benefit has been received by many such sufferers. Patients dying of cancer, for example, have been given the hallucination-provoking drug LSD to see if they could relate better to their environment and communicate with their families in the last months or weeks of their lives. And the drug was injected with full knowledge and consent to 80 patients by Dr. Eric C. Kast of the Chicago Medical School. He found it caused them to view events in and around them with greater clarity and with 3 dimensions. Through this insight, communication was greatly facilitated. It eliminated the depressed state for as long as 2 weeks, and some of them had discovered a depth of feeling and perception that they had not thought themselves capable of. Although the experience was short-lived and transient, it was a welcome change in their monotonous and isolated lives, Dr. Kast said. In contrast to this, friends, listen now to a report concerning the military use of psychedelic drugs as part, for example, of army arsenal. Reports indicate that the army is quietly teaching its chemical corps officers how to use a powerful, mind-altering psychedelic drug called Agent BZ as a possible combat weapon. A copy of a lesson plan outlines effects resulting from the mysterious chemical ranging from giddiness to hallucinations. Research to throw light upon mental illness has brought as a byproduct of discovery the revelation of a synthesis of a growing list of substances capable of producing model psychosis. These brief, controllable drug-induced disturbances in mental function are often profoundly disorganizing, and while they last, would without doubt be severely crippling to a military group in which they might occur. Naturally, as must be well known to you, the question of legislation for the control of this traffic in psychedelic and other narcotic drugs is under serious consideration. Dr. Heinz Lehmann, an internationally known authority on psychopharmacology, who is a director of research at the Douglas Memorial Hospital in Verdun, a Montreal suburb, says, "Somebody has said that using LSD is like playing Russian roulette on a sugar cube. Maybe you will win, and then again maybe you will lose, and very badly. It is a bad risk. About 1% of all persons who take it have lasting bad effects that may never subside, or else they might remain disturbed and require treatment for months. Some take it and beat people up," he says. "Others take it and commit suicide. Another 20% have bad trips that require treatment, and others have relapses several days after taking it. To take it is to deliberately unstructure your mind. Not a very good thing to do when you consider our minds are our proudest possession," he says. "To take the drug without having a qualified psychiatrist present, and that is the way it is being used in most cases today, is unthinkable," according to Dr. Lehmann. "It is difficult enough to control in a laboratory environment with experts present," he says, "let alone in somebody's apartment where your guide is a young, inexperienced college student." From now on, fellow members, I am going to look at this subject with you from the point of view of the expert in yoga, who, as you doubtless know, claims to be able to achieve these ecstasies, these exaltations, and liberation from the limitations of self-inhibited consciousness by the practice of contemplation of the divine. Let us look at this point of view from now on. Supposing we were watching with the seeing eye a yogi deep in meditation and successfully achieving the higher consciousness. What would we possibly see? Remember, please, I am not dogmatizing, rather making suggestions after having studied this subject for a greater part of my life. Well, we would see, for example, that the cells of the brain were that the cells of the brain were being submitted to considerable strain, and so to some stimulation. This is caused, first of all, by their being forced to dwell for long periods upon abstract subjects, the ideas of oneness, universality, union with God, and God consciousness. Such long-continued thinking stretches the brain, should we say. And then, of course, in deep meditation, the serpent fire, or kundalini, normally asleep at the base of the spine, is drawn up into the head. And I'm going to talk about this now, but before I do so, I want to make it clear that I am warning very seriously and strongly against any attempts to arouse the Kundalini without the guidance and presence of a senior in occult science. Please may it be remembered that this warning has been uttered. What happens when the Kundalini is aroused? You know, it is the creative life force in nature and in man, where, as H.P. Blavatsky says, it is sheathed with care within the spinal cord. Normally it is said to, quotes, sleep, close quotes, at the base of the spine, in the region of the sacrum. When it is aroused, it is said to divide into three currents, a positive, a negative, and a neutral current, or triple polarity. These currents ascend gradually along canals or nadis in the spinal cord. As this force ascends, the pituitary gland receives a continuous inflow of one of the three currents of Kundalini. The pineal gland receives a continuous inflow of another current of Kundalini. And after this dual ascent has been achieved, then the central neutral current also ascends into the middle of the head. Then the individual begins to experience transcendence of life, beauty, light, and law in his or her higher consciousness. Now I'm pausing just there, friends, because doctors have found very strangely that the stimulation of the pineal gland can possibly be associated with both schizophrenia and the psychedelic experience. Let me read a brief report, this being most important to us as students of occult science. In 1958, a Yale Medical School professor of dermatology named Aaron B. Lerner published a paper on the pineal gland, its secretions, and their effects on the mind. He discovered an elusive substance, which he finally isolated and named. He called it melatonin, since it caused the contraction of melanin-producing cells. The doctor proved that melatonin was a hormone, that it was produced specifically by the pineal organ, and that therefore this organ was a true functioning gland and not merely a vestigial sight organ, a relic from our reptilian past. He discovered, moreover, how melatonin was manufactured by the pineal, and this was by the action of certain enzymes on a chemical which must pre-exist in the pineal in order for it to be transformed into melatonin. And this chemical, this precursor chemical, as he calls it, turned out to be serotonin, and it has now been established that this organ, the pineal gland, produces a chemical which indirectly has been associated with psychedelic states. Here you see, modern medical research is linking up quite closely to some of the revelations of occult science, and particularly of that aspect of it which is concerned with yoga. Now we see that a similar stimulation could be brought about by the ascent of the fiery kundalini creative life force. And when this touches with its fiery finger the pineal gland and the pituitary gland, it could possibly excite them to such an extent that they produce substances which, flowing through the brain, make it sensitive to the ego, responsive to the higher consciousness, and produce the transcendent mystical experiences which mystics and seers have described. We could then theosophically understand how this could come about. For with the whole brain in this super-sensitive state, induced by the practice of meditation and the ascent of kundalini, the brain itself would then provide an open entrance to the inner spiritual self, the ego in the causal body. Indeed, brain specialists and psychiatrists discover that the whole body thus stimulated and body consciousness expanded and increased in intensity and sensitivity of interest is one of the results of the production of serotonin. Perhaps the yogi in meditation produces without the danger and always at will, with the possibility of repetition at will, similar conditions in the brain to those which are affected by the hallucination-producing chemical. An interesting possibility, is it not, for the student? And now, in conclusion, I thought it might be interesting for us if I were to compare the effects produced by yoga and by LSD according to the numerous reports of the latter. So I will compare them. Self-elevation produced by yoga enables the yogi at will to enter into the higher states of causal, buddhic, and even atmic consciousness, to awaken to supersensory and spiritual levels of awareness. This is done at will by the stimulation produced by the regular practice of yoga as a part of life. Now, drug-induced religious experience is a kind of chemical escape from reality into a hallucinatory experience which cannot be repeated at will. It is necessary for the psychedelic to take another drug, and it is found that each time a larger and larger dose may be used, may be needed. Then on the regular practice of yoga, we may comment that this produces a self-stimulation into mystical experience, and this is brought about from within one's own spiritual and supersensory mechanism of consciousness. It is a psychological self-freeing from sensory bondage of any kind whatever. The drug-induced psychic stimulation is, however, only the result of an addiction to a drug which must be repeated every time. Then yoga increases one's self-reliance, whilst dependence on the drug increases one's dependence to outside aid, and very dangerous ones at that. The successful practice of yoga endows one with greater and greater clarity of mind and thought. But the hallucinatory drugs only produce deeper and deeper confusion. For the yogi, there is spirituality, morality, and a beauty of life and thought, a sensitivity and consideration for others born of an increased sense of unity with them. But in the case of the drug user, there is only an increasing moral degeneration, as innumerable reports demonstrate. The yogi also experiences increased intuitiveness, whilst the drug taker suffers from decreased awareness of reality, as the reports which I've read to you indicate. For the yogi, success opens up a channel for the discovery of an entry into the great realm of the real, the unchanging and eternal reality behind all the evanescent events of the physical world. For the drug user, there is only a channel of escape into unreason, into delusion and unreality. The yogi attains to spiritual vision, the drug taker only to psychic delusion. And as for the after effects, let us look at those. For the yogi, the regular practice of meditation brings increased mental clarity, creativeness, increased self-control, reasonableness, and a development of his or her actual bodily vitality. The successful yogi seems to become charged with prana, the whole body being, as it were, overflowing with pranic energy and light. Compare that, friends, with the condition of the drug taker, with his depressive mental states and his tendencies to dangerously abnormal conduct, born of delusions of grandeur, for example. Thus viewed, friends, and my time is now over, one hardly needs to ask the question as to which is the better road, the psychedelic or the yogic pathway to reality. In conclusion, may I myself warn most seriously against all use, by young or old, of any psychedelic drug except for therapeutic purposes and under medical supervision.